He said that like he really meant it. Wolf's cry was just kind of boring in their ears. That was pretty good. First case is Kazoo versus Attorney General. Morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Karen Zwick on behalf of Petitioner Yoselyn Martinez-Kazoon, who's here in the courtroom today. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
All right.
Thank you. Your Honors, my client meets the definition of a refugee.
We all agree on that. Where did I get you?
Excuse me?
I think we all agree that she meets the definition of a refugee because of fear of future persecution and past persecution. But where does that get you under what appears to be a conflict in the statute?
Right, so I just wanted to begin there to make sure that it was clear that that is not actually the question before this court. The question here is how to resolve the statutory conflict between 1231A5, the reinstatement provision, and 1158, the asylum statute. The one thing that I do think is important about her past harm is that it occurred after her initial removal order. And in other words, under 1158A2D, she should be allowed to seek asylum for a second time based on a successive application.
She got reinstatement of removal. If she had not reinstated but asked for them just to issue another removal order, she wouldn't be in this predicament, would she?
Your Honor, there's no way really to do that at the southern border of the United States. If you come into the United States and you if you come in as Ms. Martinez did, you can't. The statute says that you shall be reinstated and that you shall not be allowed to seek relief other than withholding of removal.
Because it does seem like this situation is not what the extreme reinstatement provisions are meant to address. And she complied,
exactly,
was removed, and then the changed circumstances situation would have given her a way out but for the reinstatement provision.
Exactly, Your Honor. And I think that gets to the heart of this case, which is what to do about these two statutes which are in conflict.
I mean, we have one that directly applies that says for full consideration of the request for withholding of removal only. How do we undo that specific provision? How do we say it doesn't apply here?
You're referring, Your Honor, to the language in the regulation.
Yeah.
I think that this court should try to first resolve this question at the statutory level. Those regulations, I don't think, are worthy of this court's deference because they were
then address at the statutory level.
Okay.
Not eligible, may not apply for any relief under this chapter. And the only reason I went to the regulations is there's some play there.
Sure. So the problem here is that the government is asking the term relief to be quite a lot of work for its position. The term relief in the reinstatement bar is not defined. It is not defined in the INA. It's not defined any in the regulation.
But asylum has to be relief. Are you saying that asylum is not fit within the definition of relief?
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the term relief is used inconsistently within the text of the INA. And
you have to answer Chief Judge McKee's question. Are you saying that asylum is not included in the term relief?
I think for purposes of 1231A5, no. I think that asylum is not relief. I think I will acknowledge
why do so many people seek it?
I think it's more accurately defined as a term of protection.
What's the difference? Why wouldn't protection from removal be relief? That's what people want.
Right. That's what I was getting at, Your Honor, when I was saying that it was used inconsistently. I think sometimes relief is used as a broad catch-all term to define all kinds of immigration remedies. And at other times, there are points in the INA where Congress distinguishes between forms of relief that are relief and protection, using the relief or protection. And what our position is and our solution to this problem is that if this court were to agree that asylum is a form of protection and construe 1231A5 in a way that excluded forms of protection from the term relief in 1231A5.
But then you say withholding of removal is a form of protection, CAT is a form of protection, so you're reading every relief out of the word relief, are you not?
No, Your Honor. In fact, there are many other forms of relief
is there that isn't protection?
Many forms: adjustment of status, cancellation of removal, and in fact,
cancellation of removal be relief and protection?
Well, our position is that protection refers to forms of protection are things that are international treaty-based. So it our position would recognize that asylum, withholding of removal, and the convention and protection of the Convention Against Torture.
Isn't everything under Chapter 12 based upon the UN Protocol?
Sorry?
Isn't the entirety of Chapter 12 of the INA based upon UN Protocol?
No, Your Honor.
What
there are lots of forms of immigration relief that are not treaty-based. Cancellation of removal, temporary protected status.
Why would they need a regulation? Why would they need a regulation that permits an individual subject to reinstated removal order to seek CAT? Why would you need a regulation that would permit that? Because CAT is a protection, as far as you're concerned, is it not?
I think that the problem with the statute and the issuance of those regulations is actually an illustration of the problem with the statute, which is that if you take the word relief to mean quite the broad thing that the agency is saying that it means, it excludes things like withholding of removal and protection under the Convention Against Torture.
And it does, because then the regulations needed to carve that out.
Your Honor, what I would say that the regulation, what the agency did when it carved those out with the regulations is it recognized that there was a conflict between the international treaty obligations under the Convention Against Torture, and it created an exception to deal with that conflict. The problem is that the agency, there are other international treaty obligations under the Refugee Convention that were not addressed at that moment with respect to asylum.
Why? I'm not sure where the conflict would be, because under subsection 5 of the statute of 1231, it simply means that the person is not eligible for asylum, but they're eligible for other kinds of, quote, relief that would preclude them from going back to the country where they're going to be persecuted. They could go to a third country as long as there's some assurance that that third country is not going to subject them to persecution. So why wouldn't that be a kind of relief? I'm not following you.
So, Your Honor, what you're referring to are withholding of removal and protection under the right. Convention Against Torture. Those are relief from the sort of most fundamental issue with our international treaty obligations, return to a place of persecution, to a home country where you would suffer persecution. But there are a whole lot of other rights and remedies that individuals are able to receive under asylum, and that's why this case matters. Because
those other rights, are not, that's not part of the UN treaty, that's more statutory. The fact that someone, whether or not someone is who is here, is able to work. I mean, I'm not sure the UN protocol gets into that kind of weedy details.
It does, Your Honor, actually.
Where does it?
I can refer you to the specific provisions.
Okay, we'll take your time now. Do a 28-J letter and submit that.
Sure. Okay. So there are a lot. The fundamental point that I'm trying to make on this issue, though, is that there are a number of rights that are afforded to asylum seekers and asylees through 1158 and through the eventual adjustment of status that is available to asylees that are not available in withholding of removal, and that's why this case matters, and that's why.
All that does is explain why you would rather get asylum than withholding, but it doesn't help us answer the statutory question, does it?
It doesn't help. I think it's relevant to the statutory question because those other rights are treaty-based, and one of the principles of statutory construction is that the court should construe the statute in a manner consistent with international treaty obligations.
Are you saying that if we construed any relief in 1231A5 the way that the Fifth Circuit has and other circuits have, that we would be doing so inconsistent with treaties?
The Fifth Circuit did recognize the difference between protection and relief, but the problem with the Fifth Circuit's analysis is that they put withholding of removal on the wrong side of that line. The Fifth Circuit actually, in some respects,
I know what they did, but I'm not sure you answered my question. Are you saying that if those decisions, and if we were to follow those cases, that we would be doing so in contravention of treaties?
I think that those, yes, I think that those cases.
In what way? Because I'm not yet perceiving that.
I'm not either.
The Ninth Circuit case and the Fifth Circuit case addressing this issue, of course, found that the international treaty obligations require individuals to be able to have an unrestricted right to work, have an ability to travel abroad, have an ability. Ms. Martinez-Cazun is subject to yearly check-ins with immigration. She's in permanent limbo. She can't bring her child here. All of these are rights that are provided to individuals under the Refugee Convention.
And they're self-executing. They're not
They're not self-executing.
You've got the precatory issue you've got to deal with, right?
They're not self-executing, but they are made available to the to people in the United States through 1158 and through the availability of adjustment of status after someone has been granted asylum. Ms. Martinez-Cazun cannot seek adjustment of status. As to the precatory language, Your Honor, I recognize that the Supreme Court said that asylum is a precatory form of relief and that it's discretionary, but that case does not answer the question here. In that case, all the court was considering was the difference between the standard of review for asylum and withholding of removal. And because that was the question in that case, it said it held that the more likely than not standard that applies to withholding of removal was acceptable because that's a mandatory form of relief, whereas the well-founded fear standard that applies to asylum seekers is okay for asylum because it's discretionary.
And if you're right about that, it also stands to reason that our decision in Marinkus doesn't control here either, right? It was because it was addressing a different question.
I think that your decision in Marinkus is a good starting point. I think it doesn't control because it is a different question and the statute has changed since then, but it's relevant.
I know we're dealing with stories there, but to the extent that it looked at a similar, very similar kind of conflict within the statutory scheme and determined that any means any.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't control on that issue?
It does control. That's what I was about to say, Your Honor. This court in Marinkus said any alien, irrespective of status, is clear and unambiguous language, and that language is still present in 1158 today. And it's not, by the way, it's not the only statutory clue that exists within 1158 that suggests that asylum, the limits on asylum are meant to be within the four corners of that statute.
Would you urge that 1158A2C and D make clear that this situation is different from your normal reinstatement? In other words, that anticipates an original denial, which to me would then bring about a removal order, and then a subsequent application, which can be granted, which assumes, I guess, that there would be a reinstatement of removal, but allows, if there's changed circumstances, to be considered for asylum.
So you
draw a, well, normally this is the, we'd agree with the Ninth Circuit, but we have an unusual fact pattern here.
We do have an unusual fact pattern, and of course the Ninth Circuit recognized the difference between their fact pattern in Perez-Guzman and this one on that basis. I don't think that that is necessarily the only, I don't think that you should reach a decision that's only based on changed circumstances because there are other clues within 1158 that counsel against using the reinstatement statute as a limit on asylum. That's not the only clue in the statute. I see that my time is up. I can reserve the rest for rebuttal unless you have other questions.
Well, finish your answer to that and then we'll hear in rebuttal.
Okay. So what I was getting at, Your Honor, and I do want to just reiterate that there's lots of work for reinstatement to do besides this individual case. In the last fiscal year for which the numbers are available, 107,000 people were reinstated and less than 5% of them would be affected by this issue, even if you include all of the folks, not just the ones who are coming back.
Is this responsive to the question or is this kind of pre-rebuttal?
I was just saying that it's responsive. I think it's responsive in the sense that I was trying to say that it's not just this limited group. But I can sit down now.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
I'm using the wrong table. I was confused about that. Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Carnell Morgan on behalf of the respondent, the U.S. Attorney General. It's the government's position that the reinstatement statute is clear on its face and the plain language precludes aliens with a reinstated removal order.
Well, then why isn't 1158 clear on its face? 1158 says any alien. My vocabulary is not all that great, but I understand any and I understand alien. And then it says irrespective, and that's getting polysyllabic, but I still know what it means. Irrespective of such alien status, and then we're back to monosyllabic words, which are easy to get, may apply for asylum. Well, why isn't that really clear in its face? Any alien who is physically present, irrespective of such alien status, may apply for asylum in accordance with, how could it be any clearer than that?
Well, there are a number of reasons, Your Honor. One, the title of the subsection says, in general, and the asylum statute
Congress did not enact the title? some editor somewhere enacted the title, and in fact I just heard the Chief Justice caution the lawyer about relying upon the title of the statute as opposed to the text of the statute.
I have some other reasons as well,
okay,
Your Honor.
We're going to get to the good reasons, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The asylum statute itself has, I'm counting, 9 exceptions to when persons are not able to apply for asylum or must be mandatorily denied asylum. And I count 2 invitations for regulations on behalf of the Attorney General to further limit asylum.
But none of those exceptions include reinstatement bar, is that correct?
I would argue that that's incorrect, Your Honor.
Well, under subsection 2, there are a number of exceptions listed, and I'm looking at them now, and I don't see any of them. Change circumstances of one, previous asylum application, timing of the filing. But I don't see any of them as goes to Judge Rendell's question.
Yes, it's not specifically enumerated, but under 1158B2C, there's language saying that the Attorney General may by regulation establish additional limitations and conditions consistent with this section under which an alien shall...
But consistent would be inconsistent because it's not an enumerated exception.
Right. Consistent with is important.
Consistent with this section under which an alien shall be ineligible for asylum under paragraph 1.
Well, how is it creating
it would be regulation that creates a new exception, and we don't usually allow agencies to do that.
I don't understand why that exception isn't an additional limitation or condition.
Well, because it's got to be consistent with, and then the subsection 1 says any alien physically present irrespective of his status, and then there are statutory exceptions written into 1158, none of which go to what was done by regulations to carve out a whole new categorical, I hate that word, categorical list of exceptions. A whole new category of exceptions was created by regulation, not by Congress. Congress empowered the agency to promulgate regulations, but they did not empower the agency to overrule or contradict what Congress had done, nor could it.
Well,
I guess it could. It could put language in the statute saying that.
The reinstatement provision itself does that, which Congress wrote. And the government's position is that the reinstatement statute is the more specific and therefore governs this situation. It addresses a very narrow, specific subclass of persons who re-enter the United States without permission and have their prior order of removal reinstated.
That narrow, is it? It's a whole lot of people. It's tens of thousands of people.
Well, there's a difference between physical numbers and the category being narrow. But I agree, it's a lot of people, yes.
All right, so that sort of goes to the heart of your argument. There's this dispute where both of each side is claiming that your favorite statute is more specific than the other. But so your argument is that, you know, if you pass a law that applies to brown-eyed people, it might include a lot of people, but brown-eyed is pretty specific.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, but what about this issue of relief versus protection? I mean, I'm not persuaded by either of your arguments. You're picking and choosing what's relief and what's protection. I mean, why isn't it all relief? You're saying CAT protection, withholding of removal is not relief? I mean, withholding of removal is almost as good as it gets, right, for a person who's been subjected to persecution? I mean, they'd like to get asylum, but withholding is pretty good. Why isn't that relief?
I think the best answer, Your Honor, is that when you have withholding of removal granted or protection under the Convention Against Torture, under those circumstances, the immigration court still issues an order of removal, so it's not relief from removal. They can remove you, and the petitioner in this case is subject to a valid removal order at this time. She just can't be removed to a specific country.
All right, but isn't that just another way of saying it's relief that's not quite as good as asylum? But it's still relief, isn't it, in the normal understanding of the word relief?
I would say no, Your Honor. The government's position is that it isn't.
It's just protection.
It's protection. That's correct.
Help me with Marinkas. I'm looking at the opinion. I think Judge Becker wrote this. But in the opinion, he talks about U.S. treaty obligations, and there's a specific part where he quotes the U.N. protocol, and it says the U.N. protocol provides no contracting party shall expel or return I pronounce it very foul, maybe we'll have a French pronunciation, a refugee in any manner whatsoever to the frontiers of territories where his life or freedom would be threatened on account of, and then it gets into the categories that would define asylum under the INA. Why wouldn't any, as incorporated in 1158, if we look at any to mean really any, not just kind of pretend any, and to what your argument means, it's kind of any with a wink.
Yes.
Why wouldn't what we said in Marinkus basically say any means any, that there's a strict obligation that under the UN protocol relating to the status of refugees, Article 33, that would preclude us from reading the conflict, and there's a conflict within the statute, in the way that you're urging that we read it?
Well, the Fifth Circuit, I think, addressed this question.
But they didn't have Marinkus. They were deprived in that way. We have advantage. We're very lucky. We have Marinkus.
We have the very broad word any in both the asylum statute and the reinstatement provision. We have the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Cardozo-Fonseca, which explains that our treaty obligation is not to remove persons to that specific country, which withholding of removal satisfies. Asylum goes beyond that obligation.
Okay, well, that answers the Marinkus question. It doesn't answer the 1158 question in terms of any form of relief, and there's still some tension there.
Now, it's your position that relief does not include asylum?
Oh, it does most definitely include asylum.
Because protection is included in relief.
I think they're two separate things, Your Honor.
Okay, well then, aren't you saying that may not apply for any relief under this chapter? If asylum is protection and not relief, then it doesn't apply. It's really the appellant's argument, is it not?
It's not.
All right, explain to me then how any relief includes asylum if you believe it's protection.
Because they're not the same thing.
All right, so you're saying the reinstatement bar doesn't apply to asylum?
Oh, it does.
All right, I'm confused.
Asylum is relief.
Pardon?
Asylum is relief. So asylum
is relief. Everything isn't in cat protection.
Oh.
So they say.
All right. I'll ask you the same thing I asked your colleague, and that is that 1158 A to C and D
yes.
seem to anticipate a situation like this. More than the reinstatement bar does. It seems to me the reinstatement bar is to toe the hard line. If somebody comes back in, they've been thrown out once before, they're back in here, what are we going to do? You're not allowed to get any relief. Here we have a situation where she was ordered removed because it wasn't severe enough, if you will. She left voluntarily. She left voluntarily? I thought that was in the record. You're making a face. Okay.
I think she left under a removal order.
Okay, but they didn't come and haul her away.
No, correct.
The way most people who are going to try to dodge it do. She goes to Guatemala. She has changed circumstances, wants to come out back and show it that she's entitled. And under 1158A2D, she would be entitled to be considered for asylum. Why should we say the reinstatement bar is meant to apply in this situation when Congress is clearly, or at least, you know, when there are regulations clearly that would allow someone in her situation to apply for asylum?
The difference is the illegal reentry, and I would like the court to be aware that there is...
What's she supposed to do?
Come to the border and don't get on a raft and go over the Rio Grande, but come to the border, don't illegally reenter and announce that you're seeking asylum, and under those circumstances, the reinstatement bar can't apply because you haven't illegally reentered.
Wow.
That was exactly the word that I was going to use. Wow.
So she's got to know to say the magic words.
I think that she was, when she was removed, she's given paperwork that tells her you're barred from reentering the United States for 5 years and sets forth the very serious consequences that come from that. It says that you need to have advance permission to enter the United States.
Are there actually places where someone who declare asylum can present themselves and ask for that relief?
You can do so at the border. You could contact the Department of Homeland Security through an embassy or consulate.
That's not really practical. I mean,
it may not be in this case.
Are there, you know, I haven't spent any time on the border, so I don't know. But are there,
there's water.
Are there entry posts where people can? I mean, I see a lot of cars crossing in through into California, right? I mean,
yes.
Can somebody walk up on foot and say, "Could I speak to you know, I need asylum"?
Yes.
Does that actually happen, or is that some sort of theoretical fantasy?
No, I believe it does happen. She came to the United States once before, actually about 2 months prior, and presented a fake visa that she had purchased.
All right, so instead of...
She knew how to find
immigration officers at the border. All right, so she spent 300 pesos to get a fake, which I guess is like $15, is that right?
I'm not sure about the conversion rate.
All right, so she spends 300 pesos, gets a fake document, and presents herself. If she didn't present the fake document and presented herself to the same person, could she have asked for asylum and then gone through the process of getting an interview with an asylum officer, then being referred to an IJ and all that?
As I understand it, that's correct. And a sort of similar process actually occurred because she didn't have a prior removal order. She was placed in expedited removal proceedings and had asylum available to her, but it was denied
She never had an initial removal order?
She did,
The first time.
When she initially entered,
am I remembering correctly from another case we handled that the folks that appear and get put into expedited removal, something like 80%+ of them actually get a well-founded fear finding? Or is that not, am I misremembering that?
I really don't know the statistics on that. Okay. I'm sorry. If you'd like me to
I'm not sure it helps us decide this case.
Yeah. But it's really not. I mean, it's changed circumstances in that the second time she was deemed credible to prove it, and the first time, I would like to say it boggles my mind, it doesn't. I've seen too many of these cases where someone is deemed not credible because they react to you in a manner that almost anybody in life with similar circumstances would react. They don't disclose the fact that they've been viciously attacked and raped, especially coming from a culture where admitting someone like that in that society, you just don't do it. And they don't admit it, as I said, most people wouldn't. So they're deemed not credible. They're removed. And then when they come back, the circumstances of Guatemala, the only thing that's happened is she got more of the persecution than she got before. But because of timing and a lot of things, and I know this is more of a policy argument, which is not our job, it doesn't help us with 1158, but it really does seem to end up with a result which is incredibly, horrendously inequitable. Now, in fact, I just read something the other night about the difference between justice and the law. And your response to me, well, but yeah, well, that judge, that's fine, that's nice, but that's not your job, and that's true. But the right thing should be factor that in when we look at 1158 and try to interpret and make some sense out of the conflict between 1158 and the removal statute. You probably know we won't have to sense my concern.
I do understand the concern. I think the concern, particularly when you look at the American Immigration Lawyers Association amicus brief, is persons who are in expedited removal proceedings and don't have their asylum claim listened to. They don't ever get that. But this case really illustrates the opposite. She was given multiple opportunities to tell her story, and in fact does get a form of protection which prevents her from having to go back to Guatemala, the very country that she fears.
And you know, maybe I can get this straight. The form of protection, using your word, just that, are you saying that is relief?
No.
Withholding or cat is protection, not relief.
Correct, Your Honor.
So the reinstatement bar only bars asylum.
Correct, Your Honor.
Why did the regulations then carve out of that withholding and cat?
Unfortunately, the legislative history doesn't specifically address the question. My guess
it wouldn't be a legislative history. It would be the agency believes that relief includes withholding and cat, does it not?
That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the regulations address the procedure, and they do, by which someone can be granted withholding and protection. And so it wasn't...
This procedure would constitute relief to me. You're saying that procedural remedies are not relief? If you tell somebody who just received at the end of a penalty phase a sentence of death, but we're not going to give you... We would like to give you a new sentencing hearing, but it's a kind of protection, but we're not going to look at that as relief. You would not make that argument. The new sentencing hearing would be a form of relief. The person may well be spared from being executed. I don't understand why the procedural protection would not constitute relief.
If you don't buy that argument, then I think the government still prevails under Chevron Step 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I thought you'd go.
All right.
That's
right.
an easier lift than...
And what if we disagree with your position that relief applies only to asylum?
Okay.
Do you lose the case?
No. Again, I think you look at the regulation, which is very clear.
Well, I don't even want to get to Chevron Step 2 for a minute. If we stick with trying to harmonize, I mean, it would have been nice to, if Congress had passed both of these provisions we're arguing about on the same day.
That's right? Correct.
It would have been nice if they harmonized them for us.
What was after lunch?
Well, I can give you a reason why I think that didn't happen.
But
it's because...
Yeah, we'd love to hear that. So why didn't that happen?
When the reinstatement statute... the language bars any relief, as Petitioner's Counsel explained, there's multiple forms of relief. Not only asylum, but cancellation of removal and adjustment of status and voluntary departure are all considered relief. They would have had to have gone back in to each statute specifically addressing those other forms of relief and then amended it within those forms. And I don't know why it's a problem to be more specific.
They could have just put into the statute and defined if they could.
Or how about... Notwithstanding the general grant in 1158A,
right.
if you have previously been removed, you cannot seek relief.
I'm not going to debate
anyway,
that Congress could
right.
have done this
right.
better.
Right. We are where we are, but I guess my question is, if in fact we think that the word relief applies more broadly than you do, how do you win on text and structure without getting to Chevron Step 2?
I'm not sure.
Well, that's a Chevron
But I think you have to read the statutes together along with the regulation.
If we go to Step 2 of Chevron for a second, the point is arguing that the BIA's decision here was by a one-member board and that we therefore owe it no deference. And my clerk used every method one can use to search through a brief for response to that. Couldn't find it. Did a Alt-F search, read it through carefully. Imagine doing that when you can do Alt-F. But you never respond to their argument. So why should we defer? Why wouldn't that waive? Why should we defer to the decision of a one-member board?
I don't. If you buy the government's plain language argument, what the board has to say, I mean, you're reviewing this legal issue de novo. I don't think it matters particularly.
Well, to get to Chevron 2. Well, that's true. That's going back to the agency. That's not the board. That's true. We wouldn't. So you're not arguing that Chevron 2 is deferring to the BIA's decision. You're saying it refers to the promulgation of the regulations under the statutes.
Yes, you are.
Let me ask a question. We were talking about, you know, her saying at the border, I seek asylum as compared to coming in. If she had said, I want to seek asylum, but then came into the country after saying that, she has reentered, has she not?
I assume that if she said she wanted to seek asylum, they would have either placed her in asylum proceedings or expedited removal proceedings at that point.
But either way, if she comes in, she would be deemed to have reentered.
She would be deemed to have reentered, but not illegally.
But the statute doesn't confine itself to illegal reentry.
The
reinstatement bar talks about has reentered. So that this would mean that really under 1158 A2, C, and D, she can't avail herself of that at all.
I don't think it would be read that way once you're placed in proceedings. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I see I've gone over time.
Let me ask follow up on Judge Wendell's question. If she were to come back the second time, return the first time, and say she wanted to apply to asylum, and put in asylum proceedings, she hasn't illegally reentered, and then while in the proceedings, she changed her mind and said, I'm not so sure I want to apply for asylum after all. She's still here legally. So under that scenario, 1231 subsection 5 would not apply? Because she didn't re-enter legally. She's not applying for asylum, and there's no bar? 1158 controls?
I'm really not sure I entirely follow the question, but I think once you're placed in proceeding and you're here for the purpose of those proceedings, even though you've re-entered, I somehow doubt, but I have no authority to say so, that they would apply the reinstatement bar. It's discretionary, mm-hmm. as well, or at least the government perceives it to be. The Ninth Circuit relies on that in part, or at least in explaining some of their decision, points out that at least under Ninth Circuit case law, they agree with the government's position that under super compelling humanitarian conditions, the government could choose not to place someone in reinstatement proceedings or reinstate that order, but place them either in expedited removal proceedings or regular.
In fact, of her, of what Chino Chapa, whatever his name was, starting due to her kill his son, that's not that extraordinary.
Well, I have no evidence that she asked for such discretion to be exercised, but my guess is that something.
Well, are you suggesting that at this point you'd be willing to reopen the record if the request was made to allow her to make that request?
I suppose that they would have to entertain it if asked.
So, I mean, meaningfully entertain it or just sit there and kind of smirk while they listen to the request?
I assume that they meaningfully entertain all requests.
So you're
requests.
Saying it may not be too late for your office to consider her request. Is that what you're saying?
It wouldn't be my office. It would be the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay. Well, from the cases that were settled, those folks were granted asylum, according to the brief, right?
I'm not sure, but I would believe them if they say so, yes.
I mean, the amicus brief talked about, didn't it?
Yes, I believe those okay. cases were mentioned.
Okay.
It's possible. My guess is that the circumstances were more compelling in those cases than yeah. here.
I have no objection to it. Your colleague said that these asking, please don't reinstate my removal order, please issue a new removal order so that I can proceed under 1158, that's not realistic, that's not possible. Removal orders always get reinstated.
That's not correct.
Okay.
They don't always get
reinstated. So she could have asked for, please don't reinstate my removal order. You know, you can issue a new one if you want, but I really want to be able to apply under 1158.
That's my understanding, Your Honor, yes.
That she could do that.
Yes.
So aren't we talking about a distinction without a difference here?
Well, she didn't do that, which
okay.
is why we're
okay,
here.
Okay.
You're saying that
but,
too late.
But the effect would be the same. She'd be subject to a removal order. It just wouldn't have been reinstated. And if they had done that.
Well, no, she would be subject to proceedings to determine whether she was removable, and then they would consider her asylum claim, and probably it would be granted. So there wouldn't be a removal order in that case.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Kaiser, some time?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I wish Ms. Morgan worked for her client, the Department of Homeland Security, because she's expressing a lot of things that can happen at their discretion, which in my experience of more than 10 years of doing immigration law isn't actually what happens. She says that she believes a lot of things would happen, and with respect to the border entry...
It could happen. It could happen. It depends on me. Yeah.
What's your point as to specifically...
With respect to the question of she could have come to the border and things would have been okay for her... There's no.
It may have been
okay for her.
I mean, it's a crapshoot for any of us that have ever handled an immigration or asylum case. You know, there's some element of crapshoot to it, is there not?
Exactly. When someone gets in that line at the southern border, that's exactly what happens. And to place the right to seek asylum into that sort of, not even the right to get asylum, the right to seek it into that sort of level of arbitrariness is not what the statute, that's certainly not what Congress contemplated.
Let me ask you this hypothetical because I'm still trying to sort out which statute is more specific and which is more general.
Sure.
Let's assume on the same day Congress passed a statute that included two sections. One section said that any federal judge with appropriate credentials can seek admittance to the administrative office in Washington, D.C., okay, and they pass another section that says, under no circumstance shall any federal judge been impeached gain admittance to the administrative office. Which is more specific?
I think that the first is probably more specific.
Really? You mean the first one covers all federal judges and the second one covers only that tiny subset of those that have been impeached?
I think that even if I were to concede that in this hypothetical, the second were more specific, I don't think that it necessarily applies here because as your honor...
All right, well, I was hoping you'd say that. I want you to admit that the second one's more specific, but tell me why my analogy doesn't map onto the notion that anybody can seek asylum, but those laboring under prior removal orders can't.
To get to your question to my colleague regarding the numbers, for to start, the numbers for people who are seeking asylum are actually lower than the number of people who are subject to reinstatement. We have that in our reply brief. But
that's just the truth of how many people get into the country illegally. That doesn't help us, does it?
Well, it helps you in the sense that it tells you that how specific, what percentage of the overall group of individuals, so in other words, what percentage of the asylum pool would fall into this population and what percentage of the reinstatement pool. It's a much larger percentage of the asylum population than it is of the reinstatement pool.
But if we grant your argument and say that those laboring under prior removal orders can seek asylum, that will necessarily be a smaller number than the total number seeking asylum, because some people seek asylum who aren't laboring under the
law. Of course,
right?
It will be a smaller percent. It's a larger percentage.
It's by definition a subset, right? So how do we conclude that the subset is less specific and more general than the larger set?
Your Honor, I think that, to be honest, I really think that the specific general question, the best answer that you have is that the specificity that they're asking you to put into 1231A5 requires you to take an undefined word and give it a meaning, which, as Your Honor's questions indicate, means a lot of different things in different contexts and in different circumstances. So when you have a single sentence provision that turns on an undefined word, it's hard to see how that can be more specific than a statute that has sections and subsections and says twice, not once, but twice, that any limit on asylum must be consistent with those subsections, which does authorize the Attorney General to make additional rules, but notably when making this rule, the Attorney General did not invoke that authority to do so. I see that my time has long expired, unless there are other questions.
You can take it again. Your time does not expire for many, many years, Ms. Roy.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Can we just see counsel for a second, come up to the bench for a second? We'll take the matter under advisement. Next case.